Hello and welcome to the Healthy Herb Podcast, a place of information and inspiration for the home herbalist. I'm Bridget Daugherty of the Solidago School of Herbalism, coming to you from a bridged island on the coast of Maine. In today's show, I'm talking about having an epic herbal spring day based on articles found in the Botanical Anthology Spring Edition. Before we get started and get into what that day may look like, I want you to know that I'm not a doctor, nor do I diagnose or treat people. What I share is based on my own experience and what I've learned from my mentors. Ultimately, I want you to be empowered in seeking and achieving your own version of optimum health. I want you to be inspired to connect and relate to the common plants that grow all around you. Together, let's make home herbalism be as common in the everyday household as cooking a healthy meal. Now, without further ado, let's have some fun and dig in. Today on the podcast, I'm going to do something a little different than what I've done in the past. And in celebration of the Botanical Anthology's release of the Spring Edition, which is happening this week, I want to take us through this imagined and beautiful day of herbs. And I'm basing this on articles that are found in this spring edition of the Botanical Anthology. So we're going to start with a herbal breakfast, and then we'll do like a mid-morning project, and then an herbal lunch, and an afternoon project, and articles that you can read, and then we'll do like an herbal dinner. So definitely, there's a lot more to the Botanical Anthology than what I'm, this is just like pieces and hints, little gems to be found within this really beautiful journal that's offered. My overall plan is I'll, you know, mention an article that's in the anthology, and the author, and then a little tagline about what the author says their article is about. And then I will have my own perspective on that topic that I'll go into, so that I'm not taking anything away from the articles. That's for you to discover if you decide to get the Botanical Anthology and read on that author's take on it. But just little thoughts or tidbits that come to mind around these topics is what I'll go into for myself and for you as we dive in. And so my main mission here is to just inspire you to bring some spring inspiration and things that you could consider doing with herbs this spring, and also to give you a taste of the beautiful work that so many different plant-minded and herbalist folk have put into creating this beautiful edition of the Botanical Anthology. And at the end, I'll tell you the discount for this launch period of 10 days and how you can access the Botanical Anthology. You can find it on the link in my show notes. And if you click on that link, then as an affiliate, you help me out as well. So much appreciated. And I've been writing articles for the Botanical Anthology for, this will be my fifth edition of the Botanical Anthology that I've contributed an article to. It's just a really wonderful collaboration from, you know, 30 to 40 different herbalists in each edition or plant-minded folk, and of talking about all different ways that plants can be celebrated through the seasons. So if you haven't heard of the Botanical Anthology, check it out. There are digital version that you can download, or that you can actually buy a printed version through Amazon. And I'll have links to both of those in the show notes, so you can check that out. Also, within this promotional period of the next 10 days, you can get a free All About Dandelion bonus book, and that includes, that's a download, and that includes, you know, 20 articles, 13 of which contain recipes with that all can be ways that we can work with the lovely dandelion. Okay, so let's get into this epic herbal day this spring. And we're going to start off with breakfast. And the traditional Greek spinach pie with herbs and wild greens sounded like a perfect herbal breakfast to me. This article was written by Maria Christodoulou, also known as the Greek Herbalist on Instagram. And her article talks about spanakopita being a traditional Greek savory dish with spinach and feta cheese filling. It's a vegetarian pie that can also be made with a mix of seasonal and wild greens, such as stinging nettle, Swiss chard, beet greens, mallow leaves, and fennel for a spring twist. And I love this idea of making a spanakopita with not only the traditional spinach, but adding a variety of cooked greens in there. And this makes me think of spinach, you know, being known as this plant, this leaf or herb that contains oxalates in it. And so oxalates can, you know, bind with calcium, so it makes it harder for our body to actually use that calcium. So if you're, you know, having issues with osteoporosis, or even at the oxalates can kind of intensify inflammation in the joints, and even can cause maybe kidney stones with the oxalates. So this is an herb. Spinach is not an herb or a food or a leafy green that you want to eat in large amounts, fresh and raw. But from the research that I've done, from my understanding, when we cook the spinach, the oxalates become more denatured or are reduced. There might still be a few in there. But then the other thing that we can do is to cook spinach or other herbs that contain oxalates. Examples would be sorrel, sheep sorrel, yellow dock leaves. Is we can cook them with dairy, with something that's high in calcium. So traditionally, like creamed spinach, spinach that's been cooked with milk or cream or cheese. And in this case, a traditional way to cook the spinach is with cheese, feta cheese. And so the calcium that's in the dairy will bind with the oxalates and make them unusable to the body. And therefore, that won't be binding with calcium in the body or making it hard for us to utilize calcium. We might not be getting the most from the calcium from the dairy from that we've cooked with the spinach, but at least we're kind of denaturing those oxalates. Other thing that I'm thinking about is with this spanakopita dish would be, wow, so many options of herbs that you can go out and harvest and then cook down. And I like to combine wild herbs with cultivated herbs, because the wild herbs, the wild leafy greens, even in the spring, they can be so strongly flavored or even have kind of different textures than what we're used to with cultivated greens, that it's nice to combine, get those wild greens, but to make them more palatable by mixing them with something like spinach or kale or, you know, Swiss chard or something that we already have that we know and are familiar with. So this would make a really lovely breakfast. Another twist on this is, instead of a Greek spinach pie, which has the phyllo dough kind of layered with the spinach, with the greens, is a frittata. I love making a wild greens frittata for a spring breakfast. So go out and harvest your wild greens, you know, whether it's nettle or yellow dock, leaves are lovely. Oxeye daisy leaves, evening primrose leaves. There's so many dandelion leaves. And if they tend to be bitter, the first thing you want to do with those leaves is, you know, put them in boiling water just really quick and then blanch them and then toss out the water and blanch it again and toss out the water. And don't worry, you're not tossing out any minerals or nutrients. What you're tossing out are the bitter constituents. And then once you've kind of gotten rid of those initial bitter constituents, you can cook down the greens more so that the minerals become more available to us for eating. Again, if we think about our traditional cooked foods, green, leafy green foods, they tend to be cooked for a nice long time. And that really does allow for the nutrition to become more available and also becomes easier to digest, easier on the gut, and more comfortable, really, in the whole digestion process. And cooking it for a long time, cooking greens and other plant foods, the longer you cook it, not only the more nutrition is available, minerals especially, but the more of the more poisonous, quote unquote, or constituents that are, you know, bitter or can cause more problems, like the oxalates, those become more cooked out and denatured, and it's the nutrition that becomes available. So cook your plants. Okay, so we have our breakfast, and then along with our breakfast, another article we're going to pull from is we're going to have a spring tonic syrup. And this is an article in the Botanical Anthology by Christine Clay, also found on Instagram as Mama Libellula. And we can take a spoonful of our spring tonic syrup and add it to bubbly water or just have it by the spoonful as a way to start our day with a nutrient-rich tonic. Her tag for her article says, whip up a batch of herbal syrup to give your body a boost this spring. Taken daily, it provides many essential nutrients and promotes overall health and vitality. So for me, what this makes me think of, I'm not going to go into her recipe that she offers, but for me, when I think of a spring tonic syrup, I really think of either really nutritive herbs, leafy green herbs like nettle, or I really think of actually yellow dock or some bitter herbs, and then making a strong decoction with them. So simmering them down for quite a while and then mixing them with a sweetener like honey to make it a syrup. And so for me, I think my spring tonic syrup go-to would be an early harvest of yellow dock root. So finding those beautiful curly yellow dock leaves in the spring, which are also very flavorful, harvesting one of those plants, taking the root and simmering it down, and that's very iron rich. It's also very bitter. Maybe adding some mint leaves to it, something to kind of cut the flavor a little bit, and then some sweetener honey. And then once that syrup is made, yeah, adding a little bit to some bubbly water. Not only are you getting the nutrition from it, but you're also getting the bitter flavor, which is nice to have some bitters in the spring just to help boost metabolism, get the digestion going, make it so that we're more able to digest our meals, give a little boost to the functioning of our liver as well. That's kind of where I would be going with that concept, I think, as a nice spring tonic syrup. Something I've seen people do when they are making their yellow dock root tonic syrup is, as also along with the sweetener, they'll put some molasses in, which is also a nice iron source from my understanding, and a sweetener, and kind of can counteract some of that bitter flavor. And then we're also going to think about our breakfast tea. So we'll have had our breakfast. We've had our digestive tonic syrup with our bitter nutritive herb. And then we can dive into the article called Spring Zodiac Full Moon Teas. And this is by Anna Rice, or Reese, and she's also known as the Herbology Fairy on Instagram. She does some really fun tea blend themes and topics. And so in this article, she has made a tea blend that ties in with the full moon and whatever the zodiac the full moon resides in for the months of March, April, and May. So you can either take from her recipes to make a beautiful full moon tea for the month, or you could make your own recipe, but with the thought of, like what zodiac, if you're into astrology, you know, what zodiac is the moon, the full moon in this month? What does that mean to me? What herbs correlate with that zodiac in my mind, or maybe in some books of people who are into astrological herbalism, and then make a tea with that. And then as we are sipping our tea, we can read a story, and we can read the story called The Nasturtium Fairy, and that's by Kate Bowen at lightbeacon_photo. On Instagram. And Kate writes a lovely little short little story that says, embark on a whimsical journey with a nasturtium fairy as she delicately tends to her vibrant garden of flowers, each petal a testament to her nurturing touch. In the enchanting world she cultivates, where every bloom seems to dance to the rhythm of nature, a magical surprise awaits discovery. So imagine sitting at your, you know, table, sipping on your tea with the spring sun, morning sunlight on you, reading this lovely article about the nasturtium fairy. Sounds like a really nice morning to me. This article made me think of a little game that I've been playing with my 8-year-old daughter lately, which involves house fairies. And this was also inspired by a previous, I think maybe even the fall, this past fall's 2023 fall edition of the Botanical Anthology, where I don't remember who it was, I'm sorry, but there was an author who wrote an article about, connecting kids with these fairies and having them kind of exchange letters back and forth. And so my daughter decided on her own without having read that article, but that she wanted, it was kind of cold and we were making fairy houses outside, but then we decided to make some fairy houses inside just with things that we had found outside, some shells and rocks. And my daughter has made this little corner of this room, which eventually will have to get cleaned up, but into a whole fairy town, basically. And it started out just as a fairy house, and she wrote a letter to the fairies like, oh, welcome to your fairy house that I've made for you. What are your names? I hope you like it. Please write me back. And so then the fairies wrote her back and said, and shared a little bit about themselves and thanked her for the home. And it's kind of this game that we've been playing back and forth for a few days. So that's been fun. So that's kind of my take on the fairy theme. So after we're done our breakfast, we're going to move on and we're going to start our mid-morning project. And it's going to involve both making a botanical journal and then writing and doing some spring nature journaling. So the botanical bookmaking article by Ashley Moore, who's at Mother Hestia on Instagram. she teaches us to preserve the beauty and sweetness of spring by making journals with flowers picked and pressed at their peak of vibrancy. This little book can become a special place to record thoughts, dreams, gardening notes. It could even be made into a personal materia medica by gluing pressed flowers and herbs to the pages, writing monographs and formulations beside the samples. Basically, she makes these beautiful books with these beautiful pictures, telling us how to string the books together, and then the cover and the back of the book basically being layers of pressed flowers that then have a nice protective seal over them. This is just really beautiful work. It's like really putting nice intention into creating this journal for yourself and however you want to use a journal. I think pressing flowers can be so fun and easy. It's a great way to just go outside. It's so fun with kids too. And just to find whatever flowers you can find, or even leaves, variety of different shapes and colors of leaves. And you can buy flower presses that actually, you know, screw down tight together and have special blotting paper that kind of helps the plants from kind of absorbs their moisture, helps them dry out better. Or you can simply use either, I usually use like maybe paper towels or some sort of, you know, maybe watercolor paper, some sort of absorbent paper, and that's relatively thick and sturdy. And then, you know, lay out your flowers on the paper, and then cover them with another piece of paper, and then squeeze them in between book pages or with really heavy books on top. And you can do, you know, kind of like a layer of paper, a layer of flowers, a layer of paper, and then a book. And then another layer of flower, layer of paper, layer of flowers, layer of paper, and then another heavy book. And you can just kind of stack it that way just to press them. And then maybe a week later, you know, you can flip your pile of books. So the ones that were on the top that had less weight on them now are on the bottom and have more weight on them. Whatever works. And then maybe in a week, the flowers are nice and dried and you can slowly peel them off and store them somewhere safe before using them. That's the most simple way to do it. There are other ways to have fun with decorating with flowers. One could be tracing flowers and leaves instead, and then just painting in your trace lines. You can like trace with crayon, and that's a resist because it's wax, and then just kind of color watercolors over that to give it that kind of unique look of a resist with the outline of the plant, but then the watercolor is kind of soaking in to the blank spaces. You can also take the actual flowers themselves, maybe press them first. It doesn't have to be dried pressed, but just press them so that they're flat, and same with leaves, and then use paint on the plant itself, and then put that painted side of the plant down on paper, put another piece of paper over on top, and roll you could even use a rolling pin from the kitchen, roll over it, and then take off the paper, take off the leaf, and there you have a fun print of the leaf or flower left over from the paint. So, and then there's also, you know, you've seen maybe people take flowers and hammer them onto fabric or onto paper just to kind of get the colors from the flowers onto the paper. So lots of different ways to kind of use the flowers as artwork on your journal. And then once you've had this beautiful journal that you've created, you can do some spring nature journaling. And Jesse Lesson of Wineberry Adventure Scouts on Instagram created a lovely article about nature journaling, and that it's the observation, recording, and researching of plants and animals found in nature. It can be as simple as going outside with a sketchbook and a pencil to draw what you see, or you can seek out interesting seasonal subjects to both take note of natural elements and create a scientific record of your environment. And this article provides you with some spring prompts to get you started. One prompt that I would offer you, I'm not sure if this is in her article or not, but is for your spring journal, is to pick one plant a week and really use that as your study for your journal. So you could, on your first day of the week, you could observe and see what plant is really calling to you. You know, maybe in May it would be the violets because they're blooming and gorgeous and really attracting your attention. Maybe they grow right outside your door. Maybe they grow right outside your workplace. Maybe they grow wherever you take your daily walk or run, but something that really calls to you. And you can just journal about that, how it called to you, what you first noticed of that plant. Maybe you could do a quick identification, make sure you know what plant it is you're looking at, and do a little write-up based on that. And then the next day, you could take your journal out to the plant and draw what you see. You don't have to be an artist. It doesn't even have to look like the plant, but just the act of observing the plant and then trying to mimic what you see on paper really shifts the brain so that you can really get into an observational state and really see some detail that you wouldn't normally see if you're not trying to draw and copy the plant that you see in front of you. The next day, you could, you know, maybe taste the plant, and you don't have to swallow it. Probably make sure your plant's not poisonous when you ID it, but you can taste it and really in detail describe how it tastes. And then the next day, you know, you could really approach the plant and you could harvest some of it and you could press the plant and you could put it in your journal. You could make a remedy with it on another day. Maybe you're doing some research on the side if it's a plant that you're unfamiliar with. Maybe you already know how to make remedies and you just haven't made a remedy with this plant, or maybe you have already. So, you know, in the case of violet, maybe you want to harvest some violet flowers and make a violet syrup or a violet infused honey, something really simple, and then write about it. You can ask for a dream that includes this plant, and then you could write about your dream in your plant journal. Lots of kind of ways that you can like deepen your connection with the plant and use a journal as a tool to do so. Well, after all of that book making and journaling, surely it's lunchtime. And what we're going to do is we're going to start by foraging in our backyard for a wild salad. And this is based on my article that I wrote for this month's or this season's edition of the Botanical Anthology. Spring is the best time of year to forage wild green foods. The plants are tender, tasty, and full of the life force known as viriditas, or the greening force. Foraging and eating wild food can be as simple as walking around your yard and gardens, harvesting weeds, and adding them to salads. So in this article, I really kind of offer you, you know, a number of herbs that are very likely growing somewhere near you, and that are would be easy to harvest, some ideas for some flowers that you could put in your salad. So when I think of a wild salad, I think of a base of whatever salad greens you normally like, whether it's lettuce or mixed greens are really nice to have. And then to go outside and pick a variety of wild edible leaves that you find growing, and then bring those in and sprinkle them on your salad. add them to your salad. Making a full salad of only wild leaves can be a little intense because they are so full of flavor. Like I was talking about with that breakfast food, it's nice to kind of mix them with some of our cultivated greens as well. So, but you still get like so much of that flavor. And what you're really getting, because we're not cooking them down, so we're not necessarily getting much nutrition. We'll get some vitamin C from the raw greens, but we're not going to get any minerals from them. We really have to cook them to get the minerals. But we can get some soil bacteria from our raw wild greens that we're not going to wash. We're just going to pick them from, you know, a clean area. They're not like covered in dirt, or they're not from a parking, you know, under a parked car or anything, but just from a night, they're not near any dog poop or anything like that, but from a nice clean area. Maybe they're right out of your garden, but they're not plants you've planted. They're weeds that you're going to be pulling up anyway. And then just adding those to your salad. So we're going to have a nice salad. We're going to have a lovely salad dressing that we make on our salad, and it could be an herb-infused salad dressing, of course. Maybe we have some herb-infused vinegars hanging around and some herb-infused oil or some pesto that we can kind of thin out with some vinegar and lemon juice and spread that all over our salad. And then we're going to top it, our salad, with some dandelion capers. And this is an article by Harmony O'Loughlin from at Flora's Feast Botanicals on Instagram. And Harmony really is the mistress behind the botanical anthology. She is the editor. She is who brings us all together. And she is the producer of this beautiful journal. And so she provides a recipe for how to make dandelion capers, which are a homemade version of the traditional capers, but made with the plants growing right in your own lawn. With nimble fingers and a curious appetite, you have a fun project on your hands. And this is something I have made in the past, is dandelion capers, and they are really tasty. And it's just like a really fun accent to have a garnish on any plate. So you go out and you harvest your dandelion buds, like right when they're in tight little bud forms. The smaller, tighter ones I find are the best. And then you put them in a jar, try to fill a jar with the dandelion buds, and then you cover them with vinegar and let them infuse, let them soak. And then once they are fully soaked, maybe it's 3 weeks, maybe it's 6 weeks, maybe it's a year, however long you have them, then you can just kind of sprinkle them on your food. Now, I did this with my friend who's more of a chef than I am, and she added some other kind of spices and seasonings to the brine, to the vinegar, to kind of make the capers even more flavorful, which was lovely as well. But basically, capers are traditionally a bud of a specific plant that does not grow near me. I think it grows maybe in the Mediterranean or somewhere overseas. But the idea is, you know, what other flower buds might you be able to turn into capers other than just dandelions? What other flower buds would be fun to have infused in vinegar and maybe some other herbs and spices and then sprinkled on as a treat onto your salads or sandwiches or whatever? It's kind of a fun way to incorporate wild food onto your plate. So for the dandelion capers, I usually add them to salads, or maybe add them to like a tuna fish salad or a pasta salad. Or just kind of sprinkle them on top of whatever meal I might be having. Maybe even put one on top of a deviled egg could be a fun little thing to do. So what are we going to have to drink with our lunch? Well, I think we might be inspired by the iced lilac latte that Harmony O'Loughlin of Flora's Feast Botanicals also offers us. Basically, a lilac flower cold infused tea that, you know, she adds milk to. I love the idea of maybe even adding some chai spices to that tea and then adding some milk. Because, you know, lilac flowers, they smell amazing, but we can't really get that smell. I can't really get that smell in making herbal preparations with the lilac flowers. I find the lilac flowers to be actually quite bitter and astringent. You do get some of the aromatics to them, but it's not going to be like how it smells. It's not sweet. It's not a sweet flower, I would say. But you can always add some honey to anything and make it sweet. That's fine. And I have made lilac flower wine before, which is really fun to do. Plenty of recipes out there online, I'm sure you could find if that interests you. I remember lilac was like one of the first flowers that I ever thought to try to hang and dry. I wanted to like capture that scent and flower. I was in high school, surely. And I remember like hanging them up in my bedroom and just watching as they slowly like wilted and crisped up and turned brown. They didn't even keep their color. They didn't keep their scent. They just changed so much. And I just remember being like, oh, okay, well, I guess that didn't work, but it was still quite memorable to me and probably one of the first ways that I ever experimented with harvesting and drying herbs. So what are we going to read about while we sit and have our lovely lunch, our wild salad lunch and latte? We're going to read, I'm going to pick this article called Colors of Celebration, Spring Egg Decorating Traditions Across Borders and Natural Dye Wonders. That's by Atinas Morales from at Scarabajo Botanical. And that's on Instagram. And she does some really beautiful plant dyeing and hammering, it looks like, and different eco-printing. But in this article, we can embark on a global journey with colors of celebration, blending spring traditions and natural dyeing artistry. Uncover fertility tales across cultures and join the eco-printing adventure to add a unique touch to your celebrations. And this article can really get us inspired for dyeing Easter eggs or equinox eggs in that where she, you know, uses pressed flowers as resists on the eggs that are being dyed, wraps them with like a really tight netting or like a stocking or a nylon, and then dyes them that way. And those can make some really cool looking eggs. Plus, she also gives some tips on using natural plant dyes to dye your eggs with. So we're going to kind of explore that article while we sit and drink our latte. And then once we're done our lunch and we're ready to start in on our afternoon herbal project, we are going to have some fun designing some gardens. So within the botanical anthology this spring, we have two different articles that talk about growing herbs. We can grow an herb garden for dyeing for its own color. So that's going to be a grow your own color herb garden by Rebecca Desnos. And we can experience the joy of growing dye flowers and indigo no matter how little space we have, whether it's a window box, a balcony, or a garden. Find out how common garden flowers like marigold, cosmos, and many others can be used to dye fabric in a variety of incredible color and patterns. So if you're interested in learning how to dye fabric with plants, this would be a really fun article to delve into and then to like pick and choose some of the plants listed in the article, of which she lists 8 different dye plants to play with and then arrange them in a garden design. Are we going to put them in containers on our deck? Are we going to put them in a window box? Are we going to grow a full garden bed that's all full of dye plants? And the fun thing about a lot of these dye plants is they're actually really beautiful flowers. They're also really great for pollinators because they're going to be bright colored. And bright colored flowers the plant uses to attract pollinators to them. So usually if you're a bright colored flower, you're going to be beneficial for pollinators. For me, if I were to grow a couple plants off the top of my head for dyeing, which I haven't done plant dyeing at all, actually. I've just kind of like seen and observed and appreciated people that do. I definitely, of course, would choose goldenrod because, wow, it makes this beautiful yellow dye and it's really easy to grow. And it's a beautiful plant and it's medicinal and the pollinators love it. And it's, of course, one of my favorite plants. And then another one I would grow a lot of would be marigolds. There's so many different types of marigolds. They're so beautiful. They last, they bloom year-round because they're not year-round, but throughout the summer, they're a continual bloom as long as you keep pinching off, deadheading them because they are annual flowers, at least up here in Maine. And yeah, you can have everything from like deep reds to oranges to yellows. And there's also the tangerine gem and the lemon gem marigolds, which are very citrus scented and flavorful, which are really fun also just to add to your plate. So those are two that I would put in my dye garden if I'm designing one. And the next garden that could be fun, one to plan and design this spring or even to plant, would be based on an article by Tanya Anderson at Lovely Greens on Instagram. And she wrote Herbs to Grow for Natural Skincare. Grow three easy herbs to use in homemade natural skincare recipes. So she has some great, really common herbs that she lists. I'll let you explore her article to find those. I was thinking, if I was going to plant a herbal skin garden, skincare garden, what would I plant? I would plant rose, definitely. Probably rugosa rose is my favorite. I just love rose for the skin, rose petals, rose, I love making rose petal products for the skin, whether it's just a rinse, a tea that you splash on your face, whether it's drying the rose petals and grinding them into a powder in a coffee grinder and adding them to face masks, rose water, using that as a toner. So lots of different fun ways to work with rose. Even rose foot baths are so nice. Another plant I would have is lady's mantle. And lady's mantle, what I love is when I'm out gardening, is just to find these beautiful lady's mantle leaves that are covered in moisture. A lot of times it's said that it's covered in dew, but what that actually is water that actually is from inside of the leaf that it's pushing out of the leaf to keep a healthy homeostasis of moisture within itself. And taking one of those leaves and just rubbing it all over my face as a toner, it's so refreshing, it's so softening and so soothing, and it just feels so good when you're out in the morning. That's usually on the leaves in the morning, but it could be after a heavy rain the next day when there's a lot of moisture in the ground. Then the leaves will have some really nice moisture droplets on them. And just is such a lovely treat to just pick a leaf and rub it all over your face. So that would definitely be in my skincare garden. And then have to have some lavender for sure. Lavender, oh, it just smells so good. It's so anti-inflammatory. It's really beneficial if you have a sunburn to help kind of soothe and cool any sort of red inflammation of the skin. And I would also plant a linden tree. I think. I just love linden is also so anti-inflammatory. The leaves are very astringent, so they could make a really nice face toner, tightener to the skin. But what I really love is the flowers, drying the flowers and powdering them and just like mixing them, making a paste with them with some water or maybe even a little oil, depending on how dry your skin is, and just rubbing that all over your skin. Oh, it is so softening. It's just so soothing. It's so nice. So those are some top skin herbs for me that I think would also make lovely garden plants as well. Well, now that we've designed our gardens, and maybe we've even done some planting or garden prep in this epic herbal day in the afternoon, it's time to think about dinner. So I think one of the articles, Japanese Knotweed Spring Saute by Jade Alejandro of @milkandhoneyherbs on Instagram. An often overlooked wild food that doesn't always make the foraging basket is Japanese knotweed. The young shoots are a perennial vegetable that can be harvested from the early spring through early fall and are rich in the heart-healthy antioxidant resveratrol. Saute them with other spring greens for a taste of the season. So this, I have a little bit of experience with cooking and eating Japanese knotweed, not as much as I'd like. Every spring I'm like, oh, I gotta get more into that. But I do know that they have a very kind of sour flavor to them. They're very similar to rhubarb. They make a nice rhubarb substitute, or they could, you know, you could make a pie, Japanese knotweed pie instead of a rhubarb pie, Japanese knotweed strawberry pie. From my understanding, the knotweed, you know, this is a very, very invasive plant. It was brought to the States as a erosion control. So it was like planted on roadsides or places where there would be a potential erosion because the roots are so dense and thick and they spread so quickly and easily that they make like a great way to control erosion. However, their roots are so dense and thick and spread really easily. And so they're really hard to eliminate and they can spread really well. So, how do we make the most of it at this point? It is a medicinal plant. The root is used medicinally, and then it's an edible vegetable plant. So I didn't realize, and this is interesting, so maybe Jade Alejandro explains more, I'm sure she does in her article, how it's a vegetable that can be harvested from early spring through early fall. I'd be interested in the different ways that she works with it throughout the seasons. For my thought was, you know, it's the spring shoots that you want to harvest to eat because they're tender and they're sour. But then once they get to a certain height, it's not as palatable. So for me, I always thought it was like a short harvest window in the spring. And then when they start to get too big, then I'm like, oh, shoot, there I go. I missed that harvest season again. So I want to learn more about that. And when I check out Jade Alejandro's article. And so we're going to have our Japanese knotweed spring saute. We'll probably have that as a side with whatever else we're going to be eating for dinner. And then we're going to finish it all off with a dandelion blossom cordial that Susan Ilka Tuttle writes. She's also known as @whisperinthewood on Instagram. Dandelion may be perceived as a weed by most, but to those who know better, she is sheer beauty, filled with magic, culinary delight, and healing medicine. Her flower creates a blossom that smells and tastes mildly of honey, which can be wildcrafted into a delicious and nourishing cordial. So anything dandelion flower, I am a fan of. Cordial to me, and I talked about this in one somewhere along the line in a podcast just about cordials and how the initial idea of a cordial was that it was a heart tonic, and it was often heart tonic herbs that were used in cordials. But also I think cordial just kind of takes on another understanding or definition, which is basically an herb infused and sweetened liqueur. So that can be, you know, had as a after dinner beverage, like kind of a sweet dessert liqueur. So many things could be turned into cordials, but I love this idea of having a beautiful, sunny, yellow dandelion flower cordial. And there we have it. There is our lovely, epic herbal spring day as inspired by this season's edition of the Botanical Anthology. So this is the launch week of the Botanical Anthology. It's available both on digital and physical copies. If you purchase it within this launch week, it is on sale. It's 20% off. So it's $18 during the promotional period, when normally the price will be at $23 after the launch. And if you buy it within this launch, which I think is the next 10 days, definitely the next 7 days, if not 10, then you also get a bonus booklet called All About Dandelion, which has 20 articles, including 13 recipes. I wrote an article about dandelion-infused vinegar, dandelion flower-infused vinegar for that booklet. But that's a beauty unto itself. And then after the launch, to get that booklet, it's $3. And that's only available digital download. So the Plant Wonder Collective is who is kind of the overarching publisher of the Botanical Anthology magazine. So you can look them up on Instagram as well, the Plant Wonder Collective, and see what's going on there. And I hope that this this podcast has brought you a little spring inspiration and information. And if you want to check out the Botanical Anthology, go ahead and check my show notes. I'll have links to both the digital download and the printed version. Check it out. Let me know what you think. I just want to thank you so much for listening. I appreciate all of you. I also want to thank you so much to the folks who have left reviews for me on Apple Podcasts, and if there's any other venues that have, or even just folks who have emailed me or Instagram messaged me saying, you know, thank you so much for doing the podcast. I love it. Just really grateful for all your kind words. It does keep me going, and I'm happy to be back. And I hope to continue to offer you some fun, inspiring, and informative topics all about herbs. So if you're in the mood, I would love a review. I'd love to hear from you and see what you think of the podcast. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, my website, all under the tag Solidago Herb School. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Bridget Daugherty. Until next week, be well, let intuition guide you, and have fun with herbs.